Brother Lou will now lead us in the third class on the Book of Esther.
We left off yesterday considering the humiliation of Haman. And Brother Al was talking after class, and there's a point or something that we note here with Haman and Mordecai. When the king says, "Take the apparel and the horse and do as thou hast said." With that, we note that when Haman is taking Mordecai through the streets, he won't use Mordecai's name. He says the man. He won't even speak the name. You can imagine the anger developing within Haman at that time. But what about from Mordecai's point of view? You know, perhaps this Mordecai sees this as a divine indication of what was to be. Providence was going to make a change here in the events of his life. There was going to be a reversal of fortunes. Haman, who had decreed to destroy Mordecai, was now having to reverence him against his will. So God is encouraging Mordecai. We see a typical aspect to this. When men will be forced to honor the king of the Jews. Let's turn over to Zephaniah chapter 3. And this will be for all Jews as well. Zephaniah 3, reading at verse 19. "Behold, at that time I will undo all that afflict thee, and I will save her that halteth, and gather her that was driven out. And I will get them praise and fame in every land where they have been put to shame. At that time will I bring you again, even in the time that I gather you. For I will make you a name and a praise among all the people of the earth, when I turn back your captivity before your eyes, saith the Lord." Well, there's another typical aspect to this. Again, as we mentioned, when that antitypical Mordecai will be honored and reverenced. And we see the climactic view of what's presented to us in Esther over in Revelation chapter 19. Revelation 19, verse 11. "And I saw heaven open, and behold, a white horse, and he that sat upon him was called Faithful and True, and in righteousness he doth judge and make war." And then jumping down to verse 14. "And the armies which were in heaven followed him upon white horses, clothed in fine linen, white and clean." The white horse here has a typical aspect, and I think Brother Mansfield calls it, there's an Israelitish aspect to this vision here, where if we go and look in Zechariah 10, we find that Judah is called the battle horse. So we see here, he that is called Faithful and True, and that's very descriptive of Mordecai's character, who was faithful and true to God. On his goodly horse in battle. And the armies that ride these horses are riding white horses as well, and they are clothed in white linen, or fine linen, white and clean, vestures that have been washed in the blood of the Lamb. Vestures typifying that royal garment, righteousness, to be worn by those who are exalted to that position in the kingdom. And we read, "They shall confound the rulers of the nations," in Zechariah 10. these men on these horses will confound the nations. And we think of the events here. Obviously, Haman is very confounded as to what happened. But the people in Shushan and around were confounded as well, because they know that Mordecai had written that decree stating that the Jews were to be destroyed. And now Mordecai is honoring Haman is honoring his enemy. He's having to honor his enemy, who would not bow down to him. So Haman runs home, all mortified, and complains about the events. Again, all that he has, all of his riches, all of his wealth, his high position in the kingdom, mean nothing to him because of Mordecai. And he's given that prophecy that if the Jews, that he would be, if Mordecai is the seed of the Jews, that he would begin to fall, and he would not prevail against him, but would surely fall before Mordecai. Let's turn over to Esther chapter 7. Haman is now called to another feast. Esther chapter 7, verse 1. So the king and Haman came to banquet with Esther the queen. And the king said again unto Esther on the second day at the banquet of wine, "What is thy petition, Queen Esther? And it shall be granted thee. And what is thy request? And it shall be performed, even unto half the kingdom." Then Esther the queen answered and said, "If I have found favor in thy sight, O king, and if it please the king, let my life be given me at my petition, and my people at my request. For we are sold, I and my people, to be destroyed, to be slain, and to perish. But if we had been sold for a bondman and a bondwoman, I had held my tongue, although the enemy could not countervail the king's damage." Then the king Ahasuerus answered and said unto Esther the queen, "Who is he, and where is he, that durst presume in his heart to do so?" And Esther said, "The adversary, the enemy, is this wicked Haman." Then Haman was afraid before the king and the queen. And the king, arising from the banquet of wine in his wrath, went into the palace garden. And Haman stood up to make request for his life to Esther the queen, for he saw that there was evil determined against him by the king. We remember the other acrostic we find here in this verse. Esther quotes basically what Haman had written in that decree. And we note her wording in that fourth verse. To be destroyed, to be slain, and to perish. And now she says, when the king asks, "Well, who is it?" She says, "The adversary, the Ish-sar, the mighty man adversary, the enemy, the wicked, this unkind and vicious in disposition person is Haman." You know, how do you think Haman would felt when the king looked at him? We got to give some credit here to the king, because rather than making a rash statement, he steps outside into the garden. And that's to his credit. Let's turn over to Proverbs chapter 16. Proverbs 16 and verse 32. "He that is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he that ruleth his spirit than he that taketh a city." Self-mastery is the greatest victory for us, as it is for the king in this point. We excuse bad temper as a part of the natural infirmities that we have to contend with, but it's evidence of pride and impatience. We are told to add to patience godliness, or self-control. In Proverbs 29, we read concerning, and this fits to Haman, Proverbs, turn over there, Proverbs 29. in verse 11, "A fool uttereth all his mind, but a wise man keepeth it in till afterwards." Haman was a fool who would utter all his mind. In other words, once a fool loses his temper, he's going to tell you everything he has to know, or that he does know, everything he thinks, everything he intends, until he's poured out all of his foolishness. But this proverb says that a wise man holds it back, and a better phrasing would be calm it back. Okay, one who has it under control. Anger has to be overcome, and not just holding it back till later. James in chapter 1 tells us, "Wherefore, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. For the wrath of man worketh not the righteousness of God." The wrath of man is anger stimulated by the flesh, whereas divine anger is motivated by the Word. And it says, "It worketh not the righteousness of God." The righteousness of God for us to be manifesting is to manifest our faith in our works. All right, let's go back to Esther chapter 7. Esther 7, verse 8. "Then the king returned out of the palace garden into the place of the banquet of wine. And Haman was fallen upon the bed whereon Esther was. Then said the king, Will he force the queen also before me in the house? As the word went out of the king's mouth, they covered Haman's face. And Harbona, one of the chamberlains, said before the king, Behold also the gallows 50 cubits high which Haman made for Mordecai, who had spoken good for the king, standeth in the house of Haman. Then the king said, Hang him thereon. So they hanged Haman on the gallows that he had prepared for Mordecai. Then was the king's wrath pacified." You know, what else could Haman do wrong here? The king walks in, and basically Haman has signed his own death warrant. They covered Haman's face. What do we think typically that would represent? We know when Haman, after he had to acknowledge Mordecai, he covered his face and ran home. Well, he didn't want anyone to see him though, did he? He was hiding his face in embarrassment. But it was basically an acknowledgement of, I don't want you to know me anymore. He ceased to exist at that point. And here he would never see the king's face again, because he would cease to exist. The same fate lies for all those who persecute God's people. Moses, at the point of no return with Pharaoh, said, I will see thy face again no more. What would the wealth, the prestige, and the power that Haman had amassed do for him now? In verse 9, my margin has for gallows, it has a reference to tree. A tree. And as we've looked at Haman, what do we find Haman typifies? What do we say? We said he was the complete man of flesh. The man of sinful flesh. And what did Yahushua come to destroy but sin in the flesh? And where was that accomplished but on the stake? Haman was blind to his condition, but Christ was keenly aware of it. One of the chamberlains, Harbona, his Persian name means ass driver, says, why not hang Haman on his own gallows, on his own tree, on his own stake that he had built for Mordecai? And how appropriate this is when we think about his name. He was leading the most stubborn and headstrong beast to the slaughter. But this did not alter the decree that had been made. Okay, Haman is now out of the picture, but the decree remains. So with Haman, we see he who was illustrious or well disposed, he who was a big man in his own eyes. We saw his pride, his wrath, his desire to destroy, genocide a people. He lied to accomplish what he would to the king because his vengeance had overcome. He was joyful and glad of heart to be among those only to be invited to that special banquet. But we see in indignation after Mordecai refuses to bow to him that all means nothing to him. He glorified self, but nothing was of any value until that one man would bow to him. And finally, we see him mourning as he had to humbly acknowledge and honor Mordecai. Paul wrote that, "Wherefore, let him that thinketh he standeth take heed, lest he fall." Haman was sure of his position. Just as men rely on the arms of man to accomplish their position or their goals and refuse to rely on the arm of God. Let's turn over to Proverbs chapter 11. Proverbs 11 in verse 2. When pride cometh, then cometh shame, but with the lowly is wisdom. Pride here, the root word suggests a boiling up, okay? And it's used for the arrogance of those who must have everything their own way. When pride cometh, Haman, then cometh shame. But with the lowly, and we think of Mordecai's name, little man, but with the lowly is wisdom. Haman is guilty of one of those primary sins that we talk about in 1 John chapter 2. I think we heard about yesterday. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eye and the pride of life is not of the Father, but is of the world. Let's turn over to Luke 14. Jesus was coming to the house of one of the chief Pharisees on the Sabbath to eat bread. And you have to wonder, as Christ had to deal with these men of pride, these men who were self-righteous, the scribes and the Pharisees, if perhaps he wouldn't reflect on what Israel had become. They had become like Haman. Luke 14 and verse 11. For whosoever exalteth himself shall be abased, and he that humbleth himself shall be exalted. Okay, let's begin with our look at Esther. We have two names. We have Esther, which in Persian is star, and we have her Hebrew name, Hadassah, which is myrtle, or myrtle tree, which is known for its beauty and its fragrance, which we would find here also is very typical of her spiritual beauty. We're reminded of this name in Isaiah chapter 55. Isaiah 55 and verse 13. Instead of the thorn shall come up the fir tree, and instead of the briar shall come up the myrtle tree, and it shall be to the Lord for a name and for an everlasting sign that shall not be cut off. In this 55th chapter, we have a beautiful picture of the kingdom age that has both literal and figurative meanings in it. The desolate land will now become like the Garden of Eden. There will be no lack of natural beauty. The place of his sanctuary will be beautiful, and the place of his feet will be glorious. But greater glory will resound to Yahweh from the figurative trees of righteousness, which are the plantings of the Lord, that he might be glorified. We know that just as there are thorns and briars naturally today in the world, so typically there are also human thorns and briars in the ecclesia. Their sad end will be to be pulled up by the roots and burned. But there are also those in that spiritual ground of the ecclesia who will be perfected in nature by first perfecting their character. Then they will be like Hadassah, the myrtle tree. The Feast of Tabernacles, as described in Nehemiah, was a time of great rejoicing for those who were returning from captivity. When they made their booths to shelter and to protect them, they used the olive, the palm, the pine, and myrtle branches to make that covering. And this event is typical to that kingdom age. In this book, God uses Hadassah, Esther, to reveal spiritual beauty in a difficult life in a Gentile land. Hadassah would provide that sheltering cover to protect Yahweh's people. We're introduced to Esther when the king's men were searching for a new wife after Vashti had been removed from her position. So let's go back to Esther chapter 2. Esther 2, starting at the second verse. Let's go to verse 7. And he brought up Hadassah, that is Esther, his uncle's daughter, for she had neither father nor mother, and the maid was fair and beautiful, whom Mordecai, when her father and mother were dead, took her for his own daughter. So we see that she had no parents. And Mordecai's relationship to her is that of a cousin, isn't it? But Mordecai adopts her to be his own daughter. Let's back up to verse 2 of Esther chapter 2. Then said the king's servants that ministered unto him, "Let there be fair young virgins sought for the king, and let the king appoint officers in all the provinces of his kingdom, that they may gather together all the fair young virgins unto Shushan the palace, to the house of the woman, unto the custody of Hege, the king's chamberlain, keeper of the woman, and let their things for purification be given them. And let the maiden which pleaseth the king be queen instead of Vashti." And the thing pleased the king, and he did so. We go back and look at that decree that was given after the council was taken with the king's princes and wise men. It was back in chapter 1 at verse 19. And it says, "If it please the king, let there go a royal commandment from him, and let it be written among the laws of the Persian and the Medes, that it be not altered, that Vashti come no more before King Ahasuerus, and let the king give her royal estate unto another that is better than she." That word "another" there in verse 19 means one from the flock. The Persian kings were to select their brides out of one of seven royal families in the kingdom. So we think here the hand of providence working again. Esther is removed from Mordecai and put among those whose values would be quite different than hers. And we think about what a burden that would have been on such a young person being put in that environment. But God does not choose lightly those he would use to accomplish his work. That's why Esther is such a tremendous study in manifesting dedication to Yahweh. Esther chapter 2, verse 8. "So it came to pass when the king's commandment and decree was heard, and when many maidens were gathered together in Shushan, the palace, to the custody of Hege, that Esther was brought also into the king's house, to the custody of Hege, keeper of the women." God's intention was not to place Esther in peril or in a terrible environment where she could be influenced by heathen practices. We become concerned with the immediate when we see, "Oh, poor Esther, look what's happened to her." whereas divine providence can give us a much greater picture of what's going on here. Let's turn over to Romans chapter 8. Romans 8 and verse 28. And we know that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are called according to His purpose. Esther was an especially prepared vessel for this event. Living the truth consists in accepting of a humble position for most of us in our life, to keep separate from worldliness. But we have to keep in mind that Yahweh may require something else, something for His purpose, a greater testing where true faith is required. And we can understand and appreciate now how much influence that Mordecai had on teaching Esther. Esther chapter 2, verse 9. And the maiden pleased him, and she obtained kindness of him. And he speedily gave her things for purification, with such things as belonged to her, and seven maidens which were meet to be given her out of the king's house. And he preferred her and her maids unto the best place of the house of the women. Esther had not showed her people nor her kindred, for Mordecai had charged her that she should not show it. And Mordecai walked every day before the court of the women's house to know how Esther did and what should become of her. Now when every maid's turn was come to go into the king Ahasuerus, after that she had been 12 months, according to the manner of women, for so were the days of their purification accomplished, to wit, 6 months with oil of myrrh, and 6 months with sweet odors, and with other things for purifying of the women. Then thus came every maiden unto the king. Whatsoever she desired was given her, to go with her out of the house of the women unto the king's house. In the evening she went, and on the morrow she returned into the second house of the women, to the custody of Shashgaz, the king's chamberlain, which kept the concubines. She came in unto the king no more, except the king delighted in her, that he called her by name. Esther was given things for purification, oils and ointments to help beautify her skin, to make it healthy and vibrant. We know that oil is typical of that spiritual oil that's needed by the ecclesia, by us. And where is that spiritual oil found but in the Word? That spiritual ointment would have its desired effect, but we have to understand, as so with the natural, that had to be applied daily. With that, we read that Haggai notes something different about Esther. Wasn't her natural beauty, but it was her character and manner of life. We find 8 times in this book where it speaks that Esther found favor and grace, Chen and Kesed. She was also given such things as belonged to her. In the Hebrew, this implies a daily portion of food. So it appears that she was put on a diet, okay? A diet that was carefully planned and well balanced. And it's the same with the Word. We have to have a balanced input. We can't be like the seed that fell on the stony ground that pop up quickly but then wither away. You know, you can't feast and then famine. It has to be a well-balanced diet of God's Word, consistent for growth and development. She was given seven maidens meet for her out of the king's house. Again, we see the number seven. Okay, complete. The seven virgins would provide encouragement and support to sustain Esther in the things that she would face. It says that they were meat to be given her. Meat there is Hebrew is re'ah, which means to see, to look, to inspect, to perceive, to consider, So the implication is with vision. These were intelligent women. And Esther finds them to be devoted to her and very thoughtful. And it says that Haggai preferred both her and her maidens. And there's a very important principle here for us when we read how she was given these seven women. How do we choose our companions? Are they out of the king's house? And as well, with these companions, we should be helping one another to reach the kingdom. Now it's Esther's turn to come before the king. Esther chapter 2, verse 15. And now in the turn of Esther, the daughter of Abihail, the uncle of Mordecai, who had taken her from for his daughter, was come to go into the king. She required nothing but what Haggai, the king's chamberlain, the keeper of the women, appointed. And Esther obtained favor in the sight of all of them that looked upon her. So Esther was taken unto King Ahasuerus into the house royal in the 10th month, which is the month Tebeth, in the 7th year of his reign. And the king loved Esther above all women, and she obtained grace and favor in his sight more than all the virgins, so that he set the royal crown upon her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. Here we gain again more insight into Esther's character. In verse 13 we read that she could take anything that she wanted to, to go into the king's house. What did Esther take? She required nothing but what the king's chamberlain appointed to her. Esther was not concerned with outward appearance. Neither is God. 1 Samuel 16. But the Lord, 1 Samuel 16, verse 7. But the Lord said unto Samuel, look not on his countenance or on the height of his stature, because I have refused him. And this was David's brother. For the Lord seeth not as a man seeth, for man looketh on the outward appearance, but the Lord looketh on the heart. And how many times have we heard that this week? The Lord looketh upon the heart. In verse 15, Esther found kindness and favor again with all of those that she came into contact with. You know, it was her character, not her outward appearance, which again reaffirms what we said yesterday. What defines a person is not what they have, but what they are. Mordecai had prepared her well. Back to Esther chapter 2, verse 14. We read that in the evening she went in, and the morrow she returned into the second house of the women to the custody of Sheshag, the king's chamberlain, which kept the concubines. She came in unto the king no more, except the king delighted in her, and that she were called by name. The only one who could return would be the one that the king called by name. That makes us think of a greater calling, doesn't it? Those who find favor with the King of Heaven are called by name as a mark of their acceptance. One day soon there will be a great call to go out to the faithful and unfaithful, dead and living, to appear before their king. Esther didn't strive for material wealth or status. She sought for something that was much more lasting. She obtained favor and grace in the sight of the king. So we read that he set the royal crown upon her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. When we think of the occurrence here, it's not just the beauty of the crown, but it's what the wearer of that crown adds to it. They must complement the crown. Let's turn over to James chapter 1. James 1 and verse 12. Blessed is the man that endureth temptation, for when he is tried, he shall receive the crown of life, which the Lord hath promised to them that love him. King Ahasuerus loved Esther above all women. And here it had to be something more than just a physical attraction. It had to be a common mind that they shared, that the king appreciated, that was demonstrated by Esther. All this time, she had to deal with the fact that Mordecai said, "Don't tell them who you are. Don't reveal who you are." And, you know, this had to be somewhat troubling to her on why. Why could she not reveal who she was? Well, what would have happened if she stood up and said, "I'm a Jew"? I think the story of Esther would have been over rather quick, don't you? Proverbs 19. Proverbs 19. Hear counsel and receive instruction, that thou mayest be wise in thy latter end. Esther received counsel from Mordecai. And we see that as we go through this story and Esther learns more of the events, then we understand why she has become wise in the latter end. There is a time to speak, and there is a time to be silent. 5 years pass. God could easily have forced the conditions to have occurred right away, but this would not have allowed for the character development of Esther. Personal choices had to be made as to what would happen. But now we come to Haman, who tells the king about this seditious people and the reason for Esther becoming queen begins to come clear. You know, you wonder why 5 years. Well, why did it take 30 years for Messiah to be prepared? You know, all things occur in the time that deity has declared. Esther probably wouldn't have been ready at the first of that point of first year where she was made queen. We see also that she's now in a position of authority where she's able to aid her people, but prior to that she could do nothing. Her faith sustained her again. Can we develop such a faith? We need to become aware of divine times. Things aren't going to take one more minute than is required. Let's turn over to Habakkuk chapter 2. Habakkuk 2 and verse 3. For the vision is yet for an appointed time, but at the end it shall speak and not lie. Though it tarry, wait for it, because it will surely come. It will not tarry. Esther will find the advice that she had been given by Mordecai is timely and correct. In this time frame, Haman, after speaking to the king of this seditious people, is given the king's ring and told, "Do whatsoever you want." So let's turn back now to Esther chapter 4. Esther 4, verse 1. When Mordecai perceived all that was done, Mordecai rent his clothes and put on sackcloth with ashes and went out into the midst of the city and cried with a loud and bitter voice and came even before the king's gate, for none might enter the king's gate clothed with sackcloth. And in every province, whithersoever the king's commandment and his decree came, there was great mourning among the Jews, and fasting and weeping and wailing, and many lay in sackcloth and ashes. So Esther's maids and her chamberlains came and told it her. Then was the queen exceedingly grieved, and she sent raiment to clothe Mordecai and to take away his sackcloth from him, but he received it not. Mordecai has learned of Haman's plot, and he dresses in sackcloth and ashes. Esther finds out, but she doesn't know what the reason is behind this yet. So she sends new clothes to Mordecai, for she dearly loved the man. And we'll talk more about this when we look at Mordecai She's surprised when he refuses to accept the clothes. We take a lesson here again for us from Esther. Normally, it's the older members of an ecclesia taking care of the younger members, isn't it? But here, Esther found an opportunity to help an elder in her ecclesia. She could have been busy with the duties as a queen and said, "Well, I don't have time for this." But her love for Mordecai pushed her to turn around and want to help this man. When Mordecai refuses the clothes, it would have been very easy to say, "Okay, if he doesn't want them, he doesn't want them. That's all. I'm done with it." But that's not what we read. Esther chapter 4, verse 5. "Then called Esther for Hatak, one of the king's chamberlains, whom he had appointed to attend upon her, and gave him the commandment to Mordecai to know what it was and why it was. So Hatak went forth to Mordecai unto the street of the city, which was before the king's gate. And Mordecai told him of all that had happened unto him, and of the sum of the money that Haman had promised to pay to the king's treasury for the Jews to destroy them. Also he gave him a copy of the writing of the decree that was given at Shushan to destroy them, to show it unto Esther, and to declare it unto her, and to charge her that she should go in unto the king to make supplication unto him, and to make a request before him for her people. And Hatak came and told Esther the words of Mordecai. Again Esther spake unto Hatak, and gave him commandment unto Mordecai. All the king's servants and the people of the king's provinces do know that whosoever, whether man or woman, shall come unto the king into the inner court, who is not called, there is one law for his to be put him to death, except to whom the king shall hold out his golden scepter, that he may live. But I have not been called to come into the king these 30 days. And they told Mordecai Esther's word. And Mordecai commanded to answer Esther, "Think not with thyself that thou shalt escape the king's house more than all the Jews. For if thou altogether holdest thy peace at this time, then shall their enlargement and deliverance arise to the Jews from another place. But thou and thy father's house shall be destroyed. And who knowest whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this?" Now Esther can understand what's happened. Then Esther bade them return Mordecai this answer: "Go and gather together all the Jews that are present in Shushan, and fast ye for me, and neither eat nor drink 3 days, night or day. I also and my maidens will fast likewise, and so I will go unto the king, which is not according to the law, and if I perish, I perish." So Mordecai went his way and did according to all that Esther had commanded. We see Esther has matured here, and she begins to exercise the authority of her position, and she's doing it for the right reasons. She commands, which is debar, and is commonly used in Scripture for the Word of God. Her servant goes, and he comes back with that decree of what Haman was plotting. She tells Mordecai that she hasn't been called to the king's presence for a month, and approaching the king without invitation meant death. In verse 14, Mordecai reveals to Esther why she was selected as queen. And it takes 5 years for her to understand why she was selected. We see the maturity in the faith of Esther and what she does next in verse 16. She tells all the Jews in Shushan, and her maidens and her, were to fast for 3 days. And if I perish, I perish. Here we have a young woman with the world at her feet, and she's ready to give it up to save her people. We think of another incident like this. Let's turn over to John chapter 15. John 15 and verse 13. Greater love hath no man than this, than a man lay down his life for his friends. Esther thought of nothing to give up the things of this world. Esther has now developed the mind of Christ. Jesus was of that same spirit. Let's turn over to Romans chapter 15. Romans 15, verse 3. For even Christ pleased not himself, but as it is written, the reproaches of them that reproach thee fell on me. His was a life of service and sacrifice. In doing this, he overcame the feelings of self-preservation, of self-gratification. Just as Esther says, if I perish, I perish. Christ was determined to manifest the mind of Yahweh in his actions. And we see Esther doing similarly here. Jesus said, I seek not mine own will. Esther is doing the same. The reproaches of men fell upon our Master. He could have walked away from it, but he didn't. And the same for Esther. So when Mordecai hears her response, what does he do? He listens to what Esther has asked him to do now. And he turns and walks away to tell the people. They fasted. Well, what does fasting mean? It was required on the Day of Atonement, wasn't it? Other fastings that were established by tradition, not by law. And we think of it that it's indicative of sorrow, mourning, grieving. And there's a literal and a spiritual aspect to it. Literally, one would not deny food when they fast, wouldn't they? For something they desired more. Spiritually, we deny ourselves the world. Prayer is associated with fasting. Let's turn over to Psalm 35. Psalm 35 and verse 13. But as for me, when they were sick, my clothing was sackcloth. I humbled my soul with fasting, and my prayer returned into my own bosom. A lot of Christian commentators, when they look at the book of Esther, they say, well, fasting is fasting. What's religious about that? If we look through Scripture and we look at accounts where men fasted, we always find that prayer is associated with it. It doesn't say that Esther prayed. It doesn't say that Mordecai prayed or that the Jews prayed, but they did. Because that is part of fasting. For 3 days, Esther and her maidens gave themselves to prayer and fasting. Esther was surrounded. She had surrounded herself with those of like precious faith. And we don't know what the background of these 7 maidens were, whether they were converts, maybe they were Jewish, maybe they were Gentiles. We're not told. But what is important is we know that they were of one mind. And I think we're going to stop right here for today.